this was when she was like 15. I remember being up in her room and she said, I'm trans and I need a new name. And I was like, okay. Well, your father and I thought really long and hard for your name and it means something. We didn't push back immediately. We were kind of trying to absorb it. We just broke up with the boyfriend and this is my name. And so I went along with the name.
We moved in when Jonas was about 10 months old. There was no discussion about gender. There was no discussion about how we're going to raise him. You know, I know some people do this no gender thing, and we didn't, you know, no, we're just going to raise him as he was going to be.
How about some breakdancing?
We split up the fall of 2014. I'm at work, and I get a phone call from the director of the daycare, and she tells me that Jonas says he's a girl. And I remember being somewhat shocked and confused, and at the same time, I was like, oh, whatever. So he says he's a girl. Maybe tomorrow he'll say he's a fish. I don't know. I didn't grasp that it was that significant at that point.
It was in February of 19, and he goes, Dad, there's something I have to tell you. And he just blurted it out, and it's like, and I wasn't that familiar with it. I mean, I heard about Bruce Jenner, and I didn't know how to react, and I'm there like, deep breath. Okay, Sean, send me the information so I can read and then we can talk about it later. It was a tough ride home. I spent the next couple of days just in deep research trying to get as much information as possible.
She was my easy child. I never had to worry about her. She's always by my side. She slept in our bed for a long time. Like even as an adolescent, she would still come down sometimes and cuddle with us. She was active in the theater. She cut her hair. She started wearing, that is to call it, like, preppy androgynous clothes. Once she got into middle school, she didn't seem as sure of herself anymore. She would cloister herself in her room. She was not visible in the house. We always had to call up to her room. But there was something in her temperament that changed, and she was not really nice to us anymore. Maybe this is a stage that, you know, girls go through with their mothers. And I was willing, you know, it's like, she'll grow out of it, whatever's going on here.
How was into school? Awesome? Was it awesome or what?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The preschool sends out a letter to all the parents announcing one of our students is now Rosa, and we would love you all to come and celebrate and support her. And yeah, that's what it was like. And I get this letter too. Then I go to the daycare a week later to drop him off. And it's Rosa is written on the entrance sheet where I have to sign. Rosa's on his cubby. It's everywhere. I'm invisible, like I have no control, that this is my child, that but completely helpless. I just didn't know what to do at that point. Like a month or two after that, I just started using the she pronoun. Then it became all about pronouns. It became this crusade of everybody has to use the right pronoun. And he was 4 years old. I didn't even know if he knew what a pronoun was. It was never, we need to talk about this, Helen, because, Jonas wants the girl pronoun. We should talk about this. It was never like that. It was always edicts by email about what the child wants. I was trying so hard that whole year to try to tell her, please stop. Let's just talk about it. No, it was all about me having to accept this, that this is, you know, that it's what Rosa wants. I kept on telling them that this is not happening at my house.
When Sean was 2 years old, we noticed his left rear cheek was twice the size of his right. The next day, we called the pediatrician, brought him in, they looked at him, and then they sent us down to Children's Hospital. And when they opened him up, they realized that they were dealing with a rare form of cancer. They decided they had to remove the leg. 3 years later, something showed up in one of the blood tests, and when they ran the test again, they found out he had myelodysplastic syndrome, which is a form of leukemia, and he had to get a bone marrow transplant. there was no early sign of gender dysphoria. One Christmas, my wife bought a tea set for the kids, and he took the teacup and put the football in it and kicked it off. He would play dodgeball with the other kids, and playing hockey, he and his brother would go at it, you know, hitting each other with the sticks and all. So I didn't see any feminine traits. He internalizes a lot of things. So there was probably things I probably should have been paying attention to, but didn't. His original plan is his senior year in high school, he wanted to go to RIT, get a degree in mechanical engineering, with his goal to be able to develop a leg that would listen to the brain and work like a real leg. There was probably less social activities once his mom passed away. I always felt there was something bothering him, and he started to dislike hockey to a certain extent. He did go to his proms, the girl. He knew that he was most likely sterile because of the chemotherapy. It was like September 6th, I find out he has stage 4 colon cancer. He did not want to come home. He wanted to stay at RIT. His determination that he uses to fight cancer, he was so determined to get hormones and become a girl as quick as possible. His freshman year of college, I think he just fell into the wrong crowd. He was going to live with three girls. And as I know now, all of them are involved heavily into the trans thing. If he was with his regular engineering student buddies, I don't think this would have happened. And yeah, so I really think that these girls did undue influence, told him how pretty he would look as a girl. And he didn't like his body anyway, but you know, I can understand that. So I could see him, you know, falling into prey, and he got unduly influenced by them. When he told me that he was a girl, that's when he told me my new name's Eliza.
I feel like you're more looking for things to prove I'm not trans than actually, because in the end, I obviously only really started questioning like near the end of high school, and I only really realized the last semester. And obviously before that, I would have hid and suppressed everything, because at the time, I obviously didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the feelings were, so I didn't want to have them. You have seen any of them anyway.
They're convincing him up there, including the ones at RIT, the ones on staff at Strong, that you feel depressed or unhappy or all just because you're in the wrong body, you know, and your dad's the one that's not letting them. You do what you have to do. If it was any other circumstance, I mean, it'd be criminal what these other people are doing. But the way this affirmative model is, I'm the criminal.
She started hanging out with a friend of hers that was trans. So here I see this 5'2" young woman with a beard and hands this size and little feet. And I'm saying, that's not my daughter. That's not the future for my daughter. We didn't get the time to process what was going on. It was just kind of shoved down our throat. This is the way it is. This is what I need to do. I've been living with this for years. You have no idea how difficult my life is. I need to do this now. I was not ready for that. And my husband was not ready for that. We had battles. She would end up verbally abusing me. It got really ugly. If I kill myself, it's all your fault. And I can't even begin to say the names that she called me. And it was really hard because these blow-ups would happen. And my husband would yell at me to stop. Stop, stop, stop. He was always afraid that she was going to kill herself because she threatened, if I kill myself, it's all your fault. I didn't know it was so scripted. Like, I learned so much later on. But I could see that this was coming from somewhere else. It wasn't organic. This isn't something that just came out of her. Like, if I had seen that she had struggles through when she was a toddler or a young girl, like, I would be prepared for something. But this was not organic. This just came from somewhere and swept her away.
Tell me about the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. Look at me.
You want it? You want it?
Baby.
Okay.
Rosie, look. Tell me about this. Tell me about it.
I don't think they're real because the parents buy on the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. Your parents buy the presents and surprises. And on Tooth Fairy, the parents get the teeth and leave money under for the estate. stage.
I didn't know what was real. At that point, I thought maybe a therapist would help. And I would go see these therapists. And I would explain what I'm explaining here, that he never was like this at my house, and that there's got to be some other issue going on. This is not classic gender dysphoria. Is he trying to get acceptance? Is there something else, the trauma of the divorce? And they would just look at me and listen. They would say, and they would mention that, you know, Helen, you should really learn to accept this and celebrate it. And I'm like, celebrate what? Celebrate that my child's going to be put on hormones and his penis will never grow and he'll never have a normal sex life and he'll be on drugs for the rest of his life. And again, it was more of this, when am I going to wake up? I thought this was my own little nightmare. It was in kindergarten that he told me that she had told him about surgeries. She told him about sex reassignment surgery when he was like 6 years old. And that night in the bathtub, he was so upset. He's like, when am I having the surgery? Am I having it? I said, no, you're not. Am I having it? Yeah, I'm having it now. I'm having it now. He was like, wait, next morning he woke up. Am I having the surgery now? It was terrified of his private parts being whacked off. And he was six then. One more time.
Girl parts and you don't have them, you can do special surgery where they turn your penis inside out and there's a vagina inside.
Oh, and who told you that about this cool surgery? How come she told you this cool surgery?
I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
I started to learn about the puberty blockers and the hormones and the surgeries, and if my nightmare could have gotten worse, it got worse because now I knew that there could be a permanent end to this. There could be physical changes to my son that could never be turned around, and it could be permanently harmed, and it would be a complete lie.
So tell me about the hormones. Go ahead, tell me.
Well, hormones, you can also change your parts with hormones. Like, if you hormone yourself, you have to be, like, older to do things like those, too. But hormones, you just, like, take hormones and do some other special stuff.
Oh, cool. And who told you about all that cool stuff?
I saw it on a video.
You did? Why were we watching that? Okay, that's very cool.
You feel like you're insane.
I took the opportunity to look through your chart, and you have a pretty complicated medical history. I felt like the risks for you would be unique and different. And that's really from that model of informed choice, that I want you to know what some of the pros and cons are, and also to be working with somebody who has an even greater depth of experience prescribing gender-affirming hormones for transgender individuals who might be able to make modifications to that therapy to make it lower risk.
Sean had set up an appointment with an endocrinologist at the hospital to try to get hormones. The endocrinologist at RIT, he canceled the appointment. He called it and canceled the appointment saying, you can't give them anything because it would be fatal. When I had the appointment with the psychiatrist, Sean and I were together first with her. I'm looking at it as, hey, this kid just needs to explain to him. Hey, he's had a lot of traumatic events through his life and something that's not really real. And, you know, and I thought everything was going to be okay after that meeting. And I was just blown away when she turned around and told me that he's definitely transgender. And you are an unsupportive, abusive father to identify that.
So in terms of as a parent, what's my responsibility role as you see it?
That is hard. And you have been a parent for quite a long time. And we are all parents in different ways. We all face the challenge of letting our children be adults and make their own decisions, even when in our hearts they may not feel like the right ones to us.
I feel like I'm on an island. He desperately needs some help now, but what it is, and I feel like my I just feel like the professional's hands are being tied by this current affirmative model, and that I'm not sure if there's enough attention being paid to the other items.
She goes, well, you don't get it. I mean, are you right? I don't get it. You need to explain that to me. And she goes, I'll talk to Sean by himself. How's a psychiatrist not see the obvious? I had the whole timeline of everything he went through, you know, losing his leg. We had an older son that died of a heroin overdose when he was 8 years old. He went through the loss of his mom, being diagnosed with cancer again. I mean, I went through all, I said, all these things have to have a big effect on him. And, you know, just not to focus on that, to me, is malpractice. Next day after this meeting, I had scheduled with RIT's health department. I had the top people, I had like four or five people from RIT's consulting department in on this meeting to go over it. They ended up concluding, you know, you gotta let them, hey, they're adults now, you gotta let them do what they wanna do and make their own decisions. I lost all respect for the institution after that.
Someone needs to realize that, like, I know my child better than anyone else. I'm willing for her to hate me, okay? Because I will not fall for this. I will not accept this. This is illogical. This is like a crime against humanity, okay? Where does our species go if you can cut off your body parts like this? Somehow I got a text from CVS. Your prescription for TES is available. Now, I know her drugs. She takes an antidepressant, and that doesn't start with TES. She's like, it's mine. You can't take it from me. A doctor prescribed it for me. And it turned out a doctor did over a telehealth call. And it was a doctor with a Planned Parenthood in the city. You can get this by making a phone call and having a teleappointment. I mean, there was no psychological evaluation. There was nothing. When I looked at myself and my life and where she was at, I said, that can't be. That can't be that you're making a decision 19 for the rest of your life. We had seen this counselor who dealt with gender nonconforming youth. And at our initial meeting, after talking to my daughter for 20 minutes, she basically said, Wes seems pretty confident about his decision, and you need to support him in the best you can. There was another blow up, and she moved out into this other person's house. My husband and I, we started to diverge very soon on. We went to that, a couple of PFLAG meetings that he found. It was led by a trans individual, and every parent there had drank the Kool-Aid. I felt alone. Everyone I spoke to tried to get me to accept this. My in-laws wanted me to accept this, to have peace in the family. People that don't have transgender youth or have no idea how this affects someone wanted me to accept this. I felt powerless.
Oh my gosh. Wow, baby.
What's this?
I was very concerned about his mental health. He became two different children. You know, he became a girl named Rosa with and a boy named Jonas with me. You know, he was two different children. And how can that be healthy for a child to not have any sense of self, but try to manipulate himself to be two other kids and to please somebody else? And I knew that, I didn't know, I'm not a therapist or something, but I know that can't be good for his mental health. It's just, how can it be for a four-year-old to have split identities? In the beginning, I tried to use, you know, the Rosa, his name Rosa, and I tried to avoid she pronouns. I just avoid pronouns altogether because I didn't want him to be split. I want him to be one kid, so I gave in a little bit. I said, I can do this. Then let do whatever she does, and the school do whatever they do, and you'll get grow out of this eventually. He would come to my house, and he always had a choice of the girly clothes, the girl clothes, and the boy clothes. He would always pick up the boy clothes. Is he doing this to please me? Is he doing this to please... I don't know. His well-being and his mental health has been sacrificed. He has learned to navigate this world by not saying anything and telling people what they want to hear. I don't get much back from him, but I tell him that I know what's going on, that he has been put in this really hard position, and we love him very much, and we want to get him out of it eventually, and that the most important thing is to be honest and truthful and loving.
This was actually his first guitar, 5 years old, for his birthday after he had his bone marrow transplant. He wanted a red electric guitar. And I drove all over, found one for him.
How the affirmative model ever got approved is just mind-boggling. Obviously, people are proving stuff they don't understand. Because if they understood it, I can't imagine anybody saying that this is okay. I felt like I'm on an island. And let me go talk to my congresspeople, Madeline Dean. She met with me in person and had the audacity to tell me after I went through everything, you gotta let kids to be kids. And the whole thing with the transgender, it's no different than her kid getting a tattoo. And it's when I realized this is a huge problem. Politicians don't care. Our local state representatives didn't care. In the summer of 19, my late wife's sisters came up to visit, and he had told them that he was transgender. And I basically got thrown under the bus by the relatives. They're telling me that I'm just a horrible person, that you have to love your kids no matter what, and actually refused to have anything to do with me in the last year and a half. I'm trying to keep them alive, and they're pushing would kill them. There was a new psychiatrist that was a third year resident that she put in the file. The way she worded it was like, a red flag that Sean was pushing the hormone issue again. It just didn't make sense that he was so adamant about getting the hormones. You know, why? Knowing the risk, because he's not that type that'd be like suicidal. And it's one-on-one. I mean, he really believed he was going to beat it.
When I try to talk about times in the past, like things that we enjoyed doing, things that we thought that she enjoyed. A couple weeks ago, she used to sing. She's a beautiful voice, or she had a beautiful voice. So the theater group did this like cabaret thing in the city. And I taped the video on my phone. So one day, I was in my car, and I was missing her. So I put the video on and had a good cry. And that night we were washing the dishes, cleaning up the kitchen. And I said to her, I said, I had a good cry today. She's like, huh? And I said, I put that video on when you sang in the city. And she's like, don't remind me, I want to forget about that stuff. You can't erase yourself. You can't. You can't get away from yourself, no matter what you do. I have to think that they're all going to reverse. I have to hope to that. And sometimes I go back and I say, like, what would my grandmother think? You know, like, how are we getting so far away from reality? I mean, I could see if she was doing all this and I saw her come out of her shell and was effervescent and bubbly and having friends. But I don't see that at all. I see the reverse. I see that she's gotten more withdrawn. I don't know what the future holds for her. I don't know what her opportunities are. I don't know if she will ever love herself enough to be with someone. I think it's important to be a parent. And to have parents and to instill values and to raise people. And I don't see that happening in our society so much anymore. It is so easy to find groups to push you along the way, to move you onto this train. And it is so hard to find people on the other side. Okay, I was in this nightmare for, God, probably close to a year before I found a parent support group.
Hey, Big Pharma, we're sounding the alarm.
I realized that I can be a voice. I can be there for other parents that are going through this. And that's important to me.
Let me see the muscles.
Jeez. Oh my gosh.
He's only in first grade.
Oh, look at him. Wow.
What's he gonna be like when he's in fifth grade and eighth grade?
Yeah. Try to break him.
Try to break him?
This. No, like this.
You mean like feel it? Oh, my hands are cold. Oh my god.
No.
Honey actually saved my life. Saved Jonas's life. Because when she came, because I had no faith. She gave me the faith that if you stand up for the truth, you have to. And the truth is, he's not a transgender girl. That is pretty much the truth. She also is a big networker, and she got involved in the community of other parents who are going through this. And it made me feel like, oh my God, I'm not alone. Everybody I talked to before that, I would have to be like really careful. So, because I don't want them to think that I'm transphobic or I'm not accepting my child. Because as soon as I start saying these things that I'm saying to you, I see this look on their eyes like, oh, she's one of them. And I get this, like they're starting to figure out in their head that I'm some type of non-supportive, terrible parent that's taking my poor transgender daughter and not supporting her and making her wear boy clothes. I can tell that's what they're thinking. So to have a community of people that understand and have been caught up in the same thing was gave me strength and hope. As he gets older, his friends are all boys. They're all boys. And I pick him up at the playground. He's playing, he's jumping, he's playing soccer. They play swords, they go into the woods and they're playing swords. So he's one of the boys. But they're all calling him Rosa and she. It's like the emperor has no clothes. Everybody continues to call. It's like nobody's noticing that he's actually a boy. He's starting to, over time, become who he is. Because you know what? He can't help but become who he is. I was in litigation for 2 years. And then we had a 6-day trial. And it was really hard to get an attorney. I had probably the best attorney in this area give me my money back because she didn't want to touch it. One attorney told me that, but basically they thought they couldn't win. After I went to the gender clinic and he got diagnosed as gender dysphoria unspecified, she's like, well, we're done. That's his diagnosis. So once the specialist diagnosed him with gender dysphoria and it was on a piece of paper saying it, from the Boston Clinic, and then it was a done deal. This is the thing, how do we prove that he's not gender dysphoric? I even had the judge at one thing say, well, there's so many genders, there's 100 genders, isn't there? They all drank the Kool-Aid. And I had to tell you, we have to prove that the therapist's wrong, the ideology is wrong, the culture is wrong, the politics is wrong. I gotta fight everybody. It was too much. He showed, credibly, that gender medicine there is no right way, that it, we had James Cantor as my witness, and he was able to show, I think, that nobody really knows what they're doing, that this is that there is no one right way. There's a wait-and-see approach. There's this affirmation therapeutic model, is an experiment. And kids are dysphoric. If you leave them alone, often they will come out of it. The judge actually saw that this is not a, there's not one way of doing it, and it's controversial, and it's not, it's portrayed as this is the only way. If you don't do this way, you're wrong. I think our strategy was to prove that we could not co-parent. And it had, and the fight was about gender, but I never, we didn't try to prove that he was a boy or a girl in the courtroom. She was trying to prove that I was unyielding and transphobic, all those things. But they had no evidence because I never was that parent that she accused me of. I never ever wrote to or actually believed that we have to make sure my child is a boy. I never said that. I never said Jonas is a boy. I've always said, I always believed, you need to keep things open. Leave him alone. Let him evolve. So I was able to show, I think, that I am not, I was the more open parent. And also I was the parent that was more likely to not shut out the other parent. I was awarded sole legal custody, but not physical, because I couldn't prove that she is a harmful person to my child. Because in this day and age, changing your child's gender without the other parent, it's not, she's fine. She's not doing anything abusive. If justice prevailed, I would have physical custody too. I mean, he still goes there half the time. So he's still torn in two. It's ridiculous I didn't get full custody. It's ridiculous that he's going through this. It's ridiculous that she still calls him Rosa, and refuses to use the male pronoun. I have sole legal custody, but I can't stop that.
The police showed up at the house. And as they're walking up the driveway, I'm thinking, what did my other son do? Because Sean's up in Rochester. I know I didn't do anything. And at first, I was kind of caught off guard because she said that, we got a call from the Monroe County that your daughter passed away. And first thing I'm thinking is you got the wrong house because I don't have a daughter. And then it's what dawned on me. They were talking about, I said, well, that's impossible. I had just reviewed his April 9th labs and there was nothing to indicate that death was imminent. I think there's a strong possibility that he could have been taking hormones.
One of the things I can't get out of my mind is the day before the funeral, we went to view, because I was going to have an open casket. We went to the funeral parlor, and my first question is, when they're going to bring Sean in? I mean, it did not look anything like him. He had like a feminine look on the face. And it, I mean, I was still in disbelief that I really believed I had the wrong body. The one thing that jumped out at me was he was about 118 pounds from time he started chemo up until December 9th. And then a visit 2 weeks later, he was up to 126. And there was no reason that we could come up with why you have that much of a weight gain for somebody who's a consistent eater, consistent medical. If anything, we would expect the decline, you know, from the cancer. He was taking some kind of hormone that would push the weight up. Official coroner's report just used a progression of cancer. I mean, they really didn't do their homework. We tried to get a blood sample into a lab to test, and this sample wasn't usable. And I had to use a private investigator just to get the process because they were not cooperating with me at all.
Hindsight, my brother volunteered to help me out and go up there and clean out his room and bring the stuff back. And I didn't find out till afterwards that they didn't want me up there confronting the roommates or find anything. Because the roommates, evidently, I didn't know about this, but they wanted, at the funeral, they wanted his new name to be used.
during the funeral, I had everything was set up using the name and everything. So it wasn't until I saw the video, when they were videoing it, and on Facebook you're allowed to type comments, I saw all these comments about why are they using his dead name. I even know what they meant by dead name. It didn't dawn on me, everybody knew him as Eliza or whatever that name was. And it didn't make any sense. From looking at the Facebook post, I mean, it was almost like I went out and murdered somebody. And the worst part was, I knew a lot of students would be able to come down. So I went through the trouble of having the thing videotaped so that they could watch it, and they turned around and just destroyed it.
My one brother and sister, they didn't come back to the reception after the burial. I haven't heard one word from any of my siblings since the funeral. It's like an additional death. I can't fathom what the thought process is for how they could be, you know, that far out and be that vindictive. I'm almost afraid to find out the Harmons did it, because that would, it would feel like, I did everything I could to protect them. And I feel like if that happened, I didn't protect them. This is about protecting my kids. I don't want another parent to ever have to go through what I've been going through. I mean, this is a disgrace.
I understand what it's like to hold everything in and play it safe, because my father's a Holocaust survivor, so he was from Poland. The Nazis came, they shot my grandmother and shot my uncle, threw him in a ditch, and took my grandfather and my father to a camp. And then he escaped from the camp and lived in the woods for a year. And then he went to Germany and got a medical degree and came to America. That's his story. And my mom was in Korea during the Japanese occupation. And she was a school kid. And then she was in Korea during the Korean War. She was actually North Korean. So she went to the South. Then she came to America. But she has family in North Korea she has not seen ever. And they're just so, because of that, they were both super traumatized and super just not very, just closed, very shut down and very reactive and very not capable of understanding children or empathizing. So my sisters and I were pretty much on our own. So I sort of know what it's like not to have anybody to talk to besides my own head. I felt very, very encumbered when I was a kid. I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. And I wanted him to be free and to have a happy life. And I feel like he's not free. And he has a tortured existence. And I've tried everything to stop it, but yeah, he's not a free child. He's a tortured child. Even though he looks fine, I know how can he be, and I don't know how this is gonna turn out. How is he gonna be depressed? Is he gonna kill himself? Is he gonna have drug problems? I mean, he's no sense of self. Is he gonna be like a manipulator? Is he gonna cause more harm to people?
I realize that there's no greater love than what a parent feels for a child. Because I've taken time the past couple months to be with my parents. And we might not always agree on things, but I know they always love me. And they tell me they love me. And they tell me that they're there for me and that they support me. And I do for my children. Whether my daughter sees it or not, I support her in wanting the best life for her.
the announcement that one is trans reverberates through the immediate family, siblings and parents and grandparents. I'm well aware that of the anguish of the parents, and it's not just a one-time anguish that is settled by kind words from the doctor. It's an ongoing, continued anguish. Many of the parents I've seen have gone into therapy as a result, have become depressed and anxious, can't sleep, and so forth, and they don't know what to do. Some of the parents, their lives change and they become involved with this on a and get immersed in the science and parent groups and so forth. But I think for every parent who gets involved wisely with other parents, there are probably more parents who just deal with this by themselves in shame and in horror and in sadness.
What I would see consistently is that this ideology ruined everything it touches. And that the heartbreak and the devastation of parents and families was just staggering. And the desperation as this really escalated in culture just skyrocketed. This was an existential crisis for people. I saw people just with that 1,000-foot stare that this was cutting to the core of what it meant to be human. And people had no grid for this. They had no paradigm for any of this. They were just shocked, horrified, terrified, devastated, never thought it could happen to their kid, to their children. They love them so much, and to see them, to be forced to watch the slow motion dissociation and disintegration, chemical disintegration sometimes, of their own children was just like living in a horror movie. And that has only increased through the years. That has just gotten worse.
It doesn't seem real. You know, because he had beaten it. Because we kept hearing, like, when he was 2, he had a 4% chance. You know, 5 when he had the bone marrow transplant. And then when he was diagnosed with stage 4 colon, you know, it was one of those things that it felt like he beat, you know, some people, it's against the odds, but he's always been able to be resilient. I really felt that, you know, he could beat it. And I really think if it wasn't for the interference and this transgender stuff, I don't think this would have happened. I mean, I wish I had more proof of that. I always pull my hair out. What could I say to him to convince him he's making a really bad decision? And I could never find the right words, and he would shoot apart anything I would say, because it was like I made up my mind, don't confuse me with the facts. But he was smarter than that, and that's the part that I'll never understand. I rely on the faith a lot. I mean, that's the only thing you can do. If you can't, I mean, someday it'll be explained to me. You have to have faith. My late wife used to always say, hope is the belief that tomorrow will be better than today. And you just, that's where you have to kind of just, you know, keep, you know, plugging forward. I mean, I have thousands of pictures of them. A lot of great memories. And we did a lot of good things together. So he had a really good life. For everything that happened, he had a good life.
My son is texting another friend. They both decided at the same time that they were transgender.
My son transitioned in 2003. He went to Thailand and had a full surgical transition. I never in a million years thought that another one of my children would fall prey to this. I wanted to believe that she was not transgender and that she was going to figure her way out of this hole without hanging on to a transgender identity and without medicalizing herself.
It was a counselor who said, if you don't call your child by their preferred name and gender, should they harm themselves or try to kill themselves, that's your fault. She is 11 years old. She doesn't understand why her mind is acting the way it's acting. She needs somebody to help her figure it out. They told me, we're an advocate of your child, not of the parent. I told them they were fucking crazy. Said, you're out of your fucking mind. Who are you to overstep on my parental right? My daughter just started the sixth grade.
At first, I wanted to try to support her in this, you know, like, I didn't have enough information because I didn't know anything about it. I remember talking to parents of a girl who was transitioning, and they said, yeah, you know, my son, they call it son, is taking testosterone, and now he's going through menopause because the hormones, the estrogen stops, and they have to get their bone density checked, and like, that's when it hit me. It was like, what? Are you kidding me?
In the process of meeting other families that were dealing with this, I discovered that social clusters were really, really popular. Now, that wasn't my kid's case, but there was a Catholic school where there were 5 or 6 or 7 kids who came out at once. There were entire senior classes of kids graduating from high school in very small schools where every single kid identified as trans. And so I just think it became sort of a social currency for a lot of the kids to be part of something that was unique and unusual.
What it's done to my family is it has alienated my children from me because they have been taught by the people that they're associating with, by their influencers, that I'm not safe. I'm a toxic parent because I'm not going to be 100% supportive, or basically I'm either supposed to be a cheerleader for this and wholeheartedly celebrate it, or else I'm some kind of dangerous, toxic force.
I guess I have a daughter who's been estranged, and I'm just hoping that one day she'll come back. But I at this point, I don't even think it'll ever be the same.
When he started just being so difficult for us, it was really hard because I felt like I didn't know who he was anymore, and I felt like I had lost him.
Most parents, the concern is the medicalization. I personally wouldn't care if my kid wanted to live as a boy. I think it's the idea that she could go and make that permanent that's unfathomable, especially at this age. And I think that that's most parents' concern. And as a parent in this situation, if your daughter is a prostitute, you can get them off the street and get them help. If your daughter is a drug addict, you can take them to rehab. If your child dies, there's more support for you than there is if your child decides that they're transgender, because what ends up happening is suddenly you don't know your child. That's the part that blows my mind, is people say, like, well, you don't know. And I've only lived with her for 15 years, so, like, yeah, of course I wouldn't know, but a complete stranger would know better than I do if my kid is actually transgender or not. And I think that dynamic has just been so frustrating, because who knows kids better than their parents?
How parents are completely cut out of their children and nobody loves them more. I love my daughter. I love my daughter whether she wants to be Leo and a boy. I love her more than probably anybody walking this planet, because my main job is to make sure she survives. If I could, I would take up every school district in this state. If I could. But it's for the parents and the children. I don't want another family to go through what we did. And I don't want another child to feel like the people that are to love them most in the world, that are supposed to be their first and last line of defense to save them, are their enemies, because they're simply just asking them the hard questions that nobody else will. That's my goal.